The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Kennedy Hugh Hewitt live on a Wednesday morning from the West Coast for a few months because I just do not like being cold inside the Beltway. Michael Scheer loves it, though. He likes to shiver. Good morning, Michael Scheer, the New York Times. How cold is it this morning?
It's like 22 degrees, Hugh. You should just come. It's bracing and clear and fresh and actually, I'd rather be where you are. So
I was overlooking the Pacific last night, having a hamburger with some old friends in the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, thinking I'm sorry for poor Michael. Michael, give me an odds. What percentage chance is there of the filibuster being broken this week or next by Chuck Schumer?
I mean, look, in this business, you never say never, because the minute that you do, you'll be proven wrong. But all of our reporting suggests that it is highly unlikely, bordering on near impossible to think that that this is actually going to happen. The people who President Biden would need, meaning all 50 Democrats, don't seem to be there. Senator Joe Manchin, Kirsten Sinema, a few others have made it clear they're not comfortable doing this. And so unless the speech has the kind of effect that it's sort of hard to imagine, I think this is more of a kind of demonstration of frustration than it is a real legislative effort.
Yeah, I agree with that. I read your story this morning. Biden's longtime defense of Senate rules withers under partisan rancor. I also played for the audience Joe Manchin in the Senate halls yesterday, cut number 24.
The filibuster is what we have, our rules. We need some good rule changes to make the place work better, but getting rid of the filibuster doesn't make it work better.
Do you get any pressure from your constituents back home on that issue?
Well, no, I mean, what they know about the filibuster is basically what Bob Byrd has educated people on over the years. And the filibuster is what makes the Senate hopefully work when it's supposed to work. We need some good rules changes, and we can do that together. But you change your rules with two-thirds of the people that are present. So it's Democrats and Republicans changing the rules to make the place work better. Getting rid of the filibuster does not make it work better.
Michael Scheer, he has been saying this for a year. On December 19th, he told Bret Baier, I'm not changing the filibuster. Yesterday, he said, I'm not changing the filibuster. That means the filibuster is not going to change, right?
Yes, I think that's right. I will say I had a conversation with a senior White House person late last week, who also noted, though, that Senator Manchin, if he gives five interviews in a day, you could come away with the impression that he said sort of five slightly different things. And if you parse his words carefully, which I think the White House is wont to do, he speaks in particular phrases like, I'm not getting rid of the filibuster. And so I think what the White House is pinning their hope on, although I think it's faint hope, is that perhaps there's a way to construct something that allows them to get past the 60-vote threshold on this one issue while not, quote, getting rid of the filibuster, right? Is there a way to kind of modify the way the filibuster works in this one case, in this one issue? I suspect that Joe Manchin will think that that's just playing games. But again, like that would be, if there is a faint hope for the advocates of voting rights legislation like President Biden wants, I think that's it, is that there might be some way to kind of tinker with the rules in ways that don't necessarily directly violate that pledge that you just played.
Well, he doesn't want to upset his left-wing colleagues anymore, but he does say it 10 different ways. He says no 10 different ways.
Yeah.
And he said, if you carve out, you end up eating the turkey. He told Brett just a straight up no yesterday. He said, take 66 votes to change the Senate rules. It is so perfectly obvious. I think some Hill reporters get paid a bonus, like Jadeveon Clowney gets paid a bonus by the Browns for every extra sack above nine. or eight. He got $250,000. I think Manu gets paid extra by Jeff Zucker every time he asks Joe Manchin about the filibuster, because it's the only hope they've got, because this is not a good bill. Now, let's go to the bill. I just did something unusual for radio, Michael. I played all of a Senate floor speech, Mitt Romney's 7.5-minute floor speech, which is very unusual for radio. It never happens in television. Why? Yeah. Because it's very hard to make that man that angry. But when you call him Bull Connor, which is that exactly what the president did. He walked with his father in civil rights marches in the early 60s. Right. I wrote a bio of him. Republicans are not Bull Connor. They do not like this bill because it nationalizes elections and it takes away the rights of the state to control their own time, place, and manner of voting. And so I'm not Bull Connor, and I don't think he made up any ground yesterday. I think he went backwards yesterday in Atlanta.
Well, first of all, I watched Mitt Romney's speech as well. I thought the entire thing, I thought it was exactly as you described it, a kind of rare moment where, and I covered Mitt Romney for years in the various campaigns that he ran. I mean, he does have a pretty temperate or a pretty even keeled temperament. And so you could tell that his dander was up. And I do think that, in terms of the legislation, you got to sort of separate the different things that Biden was trying to do and who he was trying to talk to with the speech. I mean, obviously, he was trying to talk to Manchin and the holdouts on the filibuster, but he just reached a breaking point, I think. And he was sort of the level of kind of frustration and anger that was evident in that speech, led him to do what you say he did. Plainly, he essentially called all the Republicans who opposed the legislation racist, which, as you say, I would agree on that part. Like, I don't know, how that achieves a whole lot in terms of his stated goal of wanting to bring the country together.
It doesn't. I mean, I wrote a friend this morning. My parents used to take us to their hometown of Ashtabula to the famous house with the secret cellar that was the last stop on the Underground Railroad. Northern Republicans broke the filibuster against the Civil Rights Act. Northern Republicans beat Southern Democrats to pass the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And Joe Biden knows better. And that was one of the most divisive speeches. I turned it off after the Bull Connor George Wallace stuff. I wanted to watch it live. Thought he might try and reach across the aisle, try and move Mark Kelly. Because the people behind this, Mark Kelly and Maggie Hassan, don't want to vote on this. The filibuster is popular in Arizona and New Hampshire, which are states' rights places. They do not want to be run by Washington, D.C. Let's go to Fauci. Now, Dr. Fauci was on this show three, four, five times. I can't quite remember. Everything was fine until I finally told him, look, you've run out of gas. I have to tell you, CDC's lost my confidence. He won't come on now. He won't engage with his critics. And to yell at Rand Paul about inciting violence, when Rand Paul was on that softball field, Michael, he was attacked by his neighbor. That was so over the top. We've got grumpy old men running the country, and I'm 65 years old. So for me to say grumpy old men, that's not so far away from me, to be a grumpy old man. But I just can't believe we've got Dr. Fauci and Joe Biden running things, and they're yelling at us.
Well, so there's a lot there. I mean, just to focus on the Rand Paul exchange with Fauci. I mean, my takeaway was, and it's in some ways not unlike the takeaways that we've been talking about for Romney and Biden, is that, people are reaching a breaking point. Fauci, again, not to take his side, but Fauci, I think, had his view of it, it seems, is that he'd been, sort of operating under this withering criticism from Rand Paul, and reached his breaking point. Now, was it wise to call a U.S. senator a moron? He called, Dr. Marshall a moron, or was it wise to sort of lash out at Rand Paul that way? I suspect that a media training person would probably advise a witness in a Senate hearing not to do that. I don't know about you, Hugh, but it feels like we're all, starting our third year in the pandemic. We're all reaching a kind of point where we just sort of don't have the restraints and the patience that maybe we all did before.
Well, I'll tell you, Michael, my daughter is had it with the state of Virginia and their back and forth on rules. I think moms across the United States have had it. The Chicago teachers unions have had it. Omicron is everywhere, and it, you know, 800 police officers are down in L.A., but they'll be back in a week and a half. Omicron just is not what Delta is, and common sense tells us, hey, relax and be smart, but don't overreact. I want to give you the last word.
Well, I think that's wise advice, and you know, I think that especially being careful, having covered this for 2 years, let's not overreact. I agree.
But you know, it could get bad again. If it gets bad again, and Dr. Fauci is in charge of giving advice, it's not going to work. That's the danger, is that the lead guy is now a polarizing figure where he wasn't 2 years ago. Michael Scheer, follow him at Scheer M on Twitter. Good piece in the New York Times this morning. Thank you, Michael. 1-800-520-1234, America. Have you had it with Dr. Fauci? Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live. I'm on the West Coast today in Chicago, probably freezing his ears off. Brian Westbury, senior economist, First Trust Portfolios. Brian, good morning. Wall Street Journal headline, U.S. inflation seen hitting fastest pace in four decades. We're expecting 7.1% in December. Jerome Powell blowing a whistle on stimulus yesterday. Oops, we were wrong for the last 3 years. What'd you make of all this?
Yes, exactly. Well, first of all, we had an ice storm 3 days ago. It hasn't been above 15 degrees, and I still have a skating rink for a driveway. It is.
Oh, I'm in Newport Beach, California. It's lovely out here.
So anyway, look, I'm glad Jerome Powell is finally going to focus on inflation. The problem is, 2 years ago, we told the world what would happen if they allowed the money supply to do what it did. And at the same time, shut down the economy. They destroyed the supply chains of the economy. And it's deeper than just supply chains, because the economy is so complicated that when you close it down, it loses information.
Yep.
It's like your computer. If part of your drives and CPU lose power, your computer can't think as
Brian, can I give you another analogy? I was talking last night. Yeah. A friend of mine had a stroke and is recovering. And when you have a stroke, you have to relearn everything. And it takes a long time.
Perfect analogy, Hugh. Absolutely perfect. It's like a muscle atrophy. I mean, we'll keep going down the healthcare metaphors here. You have to use physical therapy. Well, we knew they were going to destroy supply chains. That's the way we talk about it today. It's really the memory of the economy.
Yes.
The second thing they did is they flooded the system with money, which is like morphine. And here's the deal with morphine. You're injured really badly. You don't feel it. You don't know it. You think everything's fine. And that's what they did to everyone. They made everybody think everything was fine. But when you flood the system with money, you get inflation. And here's the frustrating thing about Powell, is he went in front of the Senate, Senator Kennedy, love that guy, asked him straight out, what about all this money? He goes, look, we have to unlearn that the money supply is linked to inflation. And in other words,
wow.
if you understand economics, what he was really saying is we have to unlearn Milton Friedman. We have to unlearn that stuff. And we wrote a big piece on it. We said he dissed Milton Friedman. He was wrong. He should have, you know, he shouldn't have said that. First of all, he shouldn't be doing what he's doing. And now all of a sudden, here we are. Well, here's the problem. There is a way, like somehow out of the million things that they could do, you know, raise rates March 12th and then again April 2nd, taper this much, sell that many bonds, they could do it perfectly and end up with what we call a soft landing, right? So they pumped up the economy. Now they have to take us off of all these drugs, all this extra money, and perfectly bring us in for a landing without much damage. Here's the problem. The Fed has never been able to do that, and it's never tried it after such a wild expansion in the money supply. So this is like asking for a miracle. And there's no way that this Fed can do it. They can say all they want. So normally what happens is they go too far and we end up in a recession. And I'm not predicting that for this year, but I think in 2023 or 2024, they could go too far.
You know, Brian, the recurring dream of people with anxiety disorder is being in a car that's going very fast and the brakes don't work. And that's what right. I think the Fed is. They got the car going 70, 80 miles, and they can't, the brakes, they're starting to trap the, and they can't control the car.
Yeah, moving that metaphor analogy to the political world, do you have what it takes to slam on the brakes? Like, let's imagine the brakes do work, because they do. The Fed can put the brakes on, but do they have what it takes to do it? Do they have the political will? And what we have found out about the Fed in the last 25 years is that they don't have the political will. The last one at the Fed to have the will was Paul Volcker, and it was Ronald Reagan that gave him that will. But we ended up with massive recessions in the early 1980s to fight that inflation.
And Ronald Reagan got wiped out. The Republicans got wiped out in 1982 because of that. I mean, wiped right. out.
Yes, in the end, it was the right thing to do, and that's one of the reasons why Ronald Reagan became Teflon. But it is so hard to put on the brakes in Washington, D.C. When everybody is on the morphine, it's hard to take them off.
No, and in 1984, Reagan, it was morning in America, but it was two long years of political pain. Joe Biden doesn't think in two long years. Brian Westbury, always a pleasure. Westbury, WESBURY on Twitter. First Trust Portfolio Senior Economist. More coming up, America. Jim Garrity, The Indispensable, starts next hour. Don't go anywhere. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning Glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live from the West Coast this morning, joined by Garrity, The Indispensable of National Review. You can follow him at Jim Garrity on Twitter. Get his morning jolt. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Hugh.
Yesterday was a remake of Grumpy Old Men, with President Biden and Dr. Fauci playing and reprising the roles of Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon, yelling at us, just yelling at us and going off the rails in both cases. Or do I overstate it?
No, I don't think you do. I'm more worried about Biden because he's going to be, you know, running the entire executive branch for the next couple of years, or at least until his, you know, ticker keeps beating. Fauci, I feel like he's less of a figure in this. I feel like Americans are kind of evolving past this. Omicron is different from past waves. I'm not saying it's nothing to worry about. It's really super duper contagious, but you know, for most if you're vaccinated and boosted, this is going to be a cold. This is going to be, you know, at worst, this is turning into a bad flu season, and that's pretty manageable. Now, unfortunately, we've got both. By the way, I checked the numbers this morning. We're beyond 86% of U.S. adults who have at least one shot.
Okay.
So. I want to hear Biden and Fauci stop complaining about the unvaccinated. The unvaccinated are not why we have a lot of Omicron cases. The unvaccinated are not why we have a shortage of tests.
They're why we have deaths.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
The people who are dying are the unvaccinated.
True. True. And that's, you know, at this point, if it's, you know, we're now more than a year after the first vaccinations became available. At that point, you've made this choice. We've done everything conceivable to persuade you. If you don't want it, like, you know, we the evidence is there. You've heard all the cases about the people who are unvaccinated. They get it, and in the hospital bed, they're like, oh my goodness, I wish we'd taken it. You know, like, if none of that persuades you, then okay, you have made your bed, you're going to sleep in it. I hope you get through it okay. In a lot of cases, you will. If you're elderly, you got a bit bigger, you know, bigger risk there. If you're immunocompromised, you got a much bigger risk there. if you got some comorbidities, yeah, you know, it'd probably be some good to get a vaccination. But
and if you're a teacher and you don't want to get a shot, you've got to resign because we've got to keep the schools open. And
yeah, we're not closing the schools because, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But by the way, so I was just talking to Duane before we started, Gio, giving an update here on ultra worried and nervous Nelly Fairfax County. Because last week we talked about between the snow. It was totally a snow closure and totally not because they're afraid of Omicron. Schools have been open Monday and Tuesday and today. And I asked my younger son, are lots of kids out? And he said, everybody with the last name starting with H. So they missed the G's. It's the alphabet virus. It's but so, you know, schools are going through it. And I was just saying to Duane that, like, if the school said, look, we've got X amount of teachers who are out. We've got this percent of students that are out. We could keep the schools open, but it's going to amount to substitute teachers showing videos for the next week or 2 weeks. And they said they had to go to do, we're going to distance learning for this week. I could live with that, but I think a lot of my other parents would not live with that because the last time they said, look, we're just closing the school for a week or 2 weeks to get a handle on the virus. Schools were closed for a year.
Yep.
We don't trust you anymore. There's no more goodwill. There's no more sense that you guys mean what you say. And, you know, closing schools for a week because of weather, wink, wink. Doesn't do anything to...
Now, I want people to know, I've got a piece coming out in the Post today or tomorrow. There are 2,046 public schools in Virginia. 80 of them are operating completely remotely. 868 are operating in a hybrid fashion, on, off, on, off. And many have completely suspended sports. I think Youngkin should make that all illegal on day one. Every school open all the time. And we send the National Guard if you need kids to if we need people to drive buses, because I know teachers are sick, but the workforce cannot take this and kids need to go when they can go.
Yeah. By the way, kind of curious, a little factoid. Fairfax County has the most school buses of any school district in the entire country. More than New York, more than L.A., more than any place else.
That is an interesting
and I know
factoid.
One of the big issues they've had this year has been, you know, finding enough the labor shortage that's hitting every industry. You know, they've had a whole bunch of bus drivers, I guess, you know, reach retirement age or decide they don't want to do this anymore. I can imagine that could be a stressful job, you know.
But Fairfax County also suspended
A1. Yeah.
Fairfax County suspended all sports. Arlington School District suspended all sports. Now, they had already taken three seasons and compressed them into 6 months. They'd already screwed up. These kids have got to play sports. It's how they get to college, Jim. It's their ticket. I can't understand how people can blithely say, shut the sports down. That's part of life.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's not, I am pleased that schools in my neck of the woods are open. I'd like to see them going back to field trips. I'd like to see them, the after-school clubs are open. They're still requiring the kids to wear masks. I'm not thrilled about that, but I'd rather have these things going on with masks than not have them at all. And if you have a clear answer of, okay, you know, and so the other thing is I don't even see in a lot of these cases a good faith effort to try to keep them open. And if you say, yeah, we had X number of, you know, we have this many people out and we, you know, half of who we usually have. Okay, all right, I'll find. But, you know, make the effort, try, and that'll build you up, that'll buy back a lot of goodwill for when you actually do need to close things down because you've run into some sort of insurmountable circumstance.
Well, let's talk about the Biden speech now, because I think I played an unusual thing today. I played 7.5 minutes of a Senate speech. It was Mitt Romney. Now, part of my audience doesn't like Mitt Romney at all. He's a friend of mine. And I helped him write his book in 2015. I'm very proud of the guy that I worked for, and I wish he had won in 2012. But I'll tell you, in 2011, helped him write a book. His speech vented the anger of someone who walked with his civil rights loving father in civil rights parades. And a bunch of Republicans feel this way. Do not call me Bull Connor. That segregationist Democrat, along with all the Democrats in the South who had to be broken open by Northern Republicans in alliance with Northern Democrats in 64 and 65. What Joe Biden said was a slander on every legislator and governor who is worried about voting security and thinks you need a voter ID and does not believe in ballot box drop boxes. And I don't. I think it's all crazy. And that doesn't make us Bull Connor.
Yeah. So why did Joe Biden win in 2020? Well, he was elected because he was supposed to shut down the virus and the pandemic, end the Trump circus, and be the rational, stable adult in the room.
Yes.
And he has failed on every front. The world is not more stable after withdrawal from Afghanistan. the world is not more stable when you can't find stuff on the grocery shelves. Yesterday's Morning Jolt was all about this. And I don't know about you, like, he did a victory lap right before Christmas.
Yep.
Jen Psaki saying Biden saved Christmas and all that stuff. Look, you know, if you go and look at the local TV affiliates, they're all doing stories on this. People are all, you know, empty shelves, Biden. Hey, look, maybe there are some conservatives who are promoting this stuff and trying to game the system on Twitter and stuff, but people aren't hallucinating the empty shelves. Now, some of this is a labor shortage. Some of this is people being out sick with Omicron. Some of the, but the other thing is that, you know, my colleague Dominic Pino went back and, you know, did the count again. There are more boats waiting at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach now than there were 2 months ago.
Yeah, I ran by them on Saturday morning, not run, trundle. And you can see the visibility out here is great. It's as long as the eye can see. It's like when I was in Brazil once and I saw the oil tankers leaving for China and said, my gosh, that's a lot of boats. That's Long Beach Harbor. It's crazy.
Yeah, and so there's been no progress on that, which is one of the reasons I think Joe Biden is going to Atlanta and giving these demagogic speeches. Is he can't do, you know, he didn't order enough tests. There's nothing you can do about Omicron. You just got to, you know, get through these next couple months. He can't do anything about inflation, even though he spent, you know, most of the last year saying, nobody's saying inflation's going to be, you know, more than transitory.
That number comes out at the bottom of the hour, by the way.
Yeah,
it's either going to be 7.1 or higher, and that is a nightmare.
Right? I mean, we are in a situation where there's this consistent pattern that some of us will notice a problem. Now, we're conservatives. We're not inclined to give Joe Biden the benefit of the doubt. But we look and say, hey, you know, this is a really bad problem on the southern border. This is just a seasonal pattern. This is just normal. This is nothing out of the ordinary. Then, of course, you have month after month after month of, like, super high numbers of people trying to cross the border. We point out inflation is a problem. They say, you know, this is nothing.
Supply transitory.
Don't worry. Pete Buttigieg has got this. You know, on front after front, This president keeps telling us, don't worry, the Taliban's not going to take over in a couple of days. You're not going to see helicopters flying people out of the embassy. We're constantly being assured by Joe Biden, don't worry, it's not a problem. And then a couple of months, it turned out to be a problem. And now he tells us, we wish we'd ordered more tests.
And Jim, I want to make sure I get your comment on this.
I'm sorry?
I want to make sure I get your comment. Conservatives don't like the media. They don't trust the media. The best example is the coverage of the filibuster. Joe Manchin has said no 50 different ways,
yep.
And he's not the only one, and we're still getting stories on it. That is simply complicity in narrative making.
Yeah, and you know, because every once in a while on, you know, the editor's podcast we do at National Review or something, Rich will say, you know, we probably should talk about whether Manchin's going to fold, and I'll feel like people are going to say the show's in a rerun.
Yeah.
Same conversation we had 2 weeks ago and a month ago and 6 weeks ago. And they keep asking him, and he doesn't change his mind. And the entire Biden strategy seems to be, well, at some point, if we chase Kyrsten Sinema into enough bathrooms, you know, if we have enough people canoeing and protesting outside of his houseboat, someday Joe Manchin's going to change his mind. You know, he's not. Guess what? He's not. You're going to have to move on to other issues. And you know, Biden can't get anything done on any of these other issues, so he focuses on the one that he thinks will, you know, stop the bleeding in 2022.
And get his base mobilized. And it's not working. When you go over the top, sometimes, as in World War I, it doesn't work. And it didn't work yesterday. Jim Garrity, Garrity the Indispensable. Read everything he writes at National Review. Sign up for The Morning Jolt, one of the three newsletters I actually read in the morning. The Morning Jolt by Jim Garrity. You get it over at nationalreview.com. Come right back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.